Hi, my name is Ramon. This discussion will be brief and nowhere as interesting as the last 2 hours on Mochi. I begin with, I am, as I said, my name is Ramon, and I head up the ICP 15 and 16 review work stream. It's a work stream underneath the Capital Solvency and Field Testing Working Group. The public consultation package for ICPs 15 and 16 were released on the 8th of November of this past month. It included revised drafts of ICP 15, which is investments, and ICP 16, which is enterprise risk management for solvency purposes. It also included ComFrame material that was integrated into these two ICPs. Originally, they were referred to as Module 2, Element 3, and Module 2, Element 4, in the 2014 version of ComFrame. It also included proposed definitions of ERM-related items, related terms, which would be included in the IAIS glossary. As part of our work, the text of the ICP and ComFrame materials were enhanced, hopefully to improve clarity and consistency with other ICPs. The deadline for comments has been extended from the 8th of January 2018 to the 31st of January 2018 in response to a request from stakeholders. The following couple of slides were used for the public background session that we had back in a couple of weeks ago, the 22nd of November. This presentation that we gave was mainly for the benefit, or this presentation that we're given is mainly for the benefit of those who were not able to participate in the public background session. The full deck of slides for the public background session are available on the IAIS public website. Over 50 stakeholders dialed in for the public background session. The main concern raised with regards to ICPs 15 and 16 was the comment period, which we have extended until the 31st of January. Some comments were also made that cover various ICPs, such as the geography of certain ICP material, for example, recovery plans and where that should reside, which is still under consideration. We also received some general feedback or comments on the process of the public consultation of ICP or ComFrame material. Thank you. This slide that you're looking at is with regards to the ICP material. So the revisions to the ICP material were built on the current ICP 15 and 16 version, and that version was last revised in October of 2011. And in the version, in the drafts that we put out for public consultation, we took into account feedback that was received from the 2015 self-assessment and peer review. The revisions to ICP 16 were also focused on ensuring consistency and to remove overlaps and duplication between ICP 8 and ICP 16. This results in material that's related to risk management in general being moved from ICP 16 to ICP 8. While the specifics of the ERM framework for solvency purposes are addressed in ICP 16. You'll see the items there in the fourth bullet point. These are the specific items of the ERM framework that have been retained in ICP 16. We've also included a table comparing the current and revised standards, which are also available as a reference document as part of the public consultation. The proposed definitions of ERM-related items, which are to be included in the IAIS glossary, also are aimed at providing clarity on the meaning of these terms that are being used in the ICPs. As mentioned earlier, the ComFrame material was integrated into ICPs 15 and 16, and which corresponds to the old reference of Module 2, Element 3 and Module 2, Element 4. This follows the thematic approach that was adopted by the IAIS in September of 2015. In addition to changes in style and structure resulting from this integration exercise, the ComFrame material was revised to take into account the overall outcome of a qualitative field testing exercise that was done by this working group, and to accommodate specific comments that were made by field testing participants. If they were not already addressed in the revision of the ICPs. As part of the consultation as well, you'll notice that we have some additional questions that are being included, where we are requesting feedback on the topics of actuarial policy and the interaction between the ICS and ERM or ORSA. And that is a summary of what we covered in the November session that we had with stakeholders. And if there are any comments at this point, I would entertain them. I think everyone's tired, but.
Don't worry, we'll resuscitate them now, immediately.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so, can you continue, correct? So we move now to the, provide you a bit of clarification, where possible, of the Kuala Lumpur Agreement, bearing in mind that there are lots of things that still need to be clarified, and lots of things is possible to do now, lots of things we need to think about them, and will be clarified in the consultation document. And as I said yesterday, for those who chaired the volunteer workshop, the consultation document is here is likely to be divided into two ideal parts. One is about the process with respect to monitoring period, and in the implementation, and the other part, which is the more technical bit, which you are used to. At the same time, the technical specification and the templates will be released to the public when this happens. But moving on to the KL agreement, just providing a bit of meat around what has been discussed so far, what has been agreed, just remind you that ICS version 2.0 will be adopted at the AGM in 2019, which is in
Abu Dhabi.
So I asked the same thing yesterday.
Good.
What is kind of important in terms of the implementation or the vision for implementation of ICS 2.0 will happen in two phases. And we clarify that there is a first phase, which we call what kind of monitoring period, where the ICS will be used for confidential reporting to the group-wide supervisor and discussion in supervisory college. What's quite important at that particular point in time, this will not trigger any supervisory action in case of breach. And it is quite important, this will allow the group-wide supervisor and the old supervisor to discuss the results of the ICS, familiarize with that, compare it with existing capital standards, group capital standards calculation, and so on. And this will last 5 years. In addition to that, I will also, because I think it's a recurrent question we are getting over this day, is what will happen on the ICS and the IIS side. We'll still be collecting all the data information from you during these 5 years, because this is quite important and is part of any potential revision of the ICS. And it is quite important also from the perspective that our parent committee would like to see our firms lined up, of course, in an anonymized way, and to understand what the impact is. Is anything that needs to be changed? Yes, no. Is there significant change needed? Minor change needed? And so on. And the second is, the second phase is about what we call the implementation of the ICS as a group-wide prescribed capital requirement, which is when effectively, and I remind you that the IIS is not a regulator, it's a standard setter, so this is when national authority, local jurisdiction will need to embed that in national law. And of course, when we do that, it's likely that we'll take into account a local specificity as stated in the IIS bylaws. Then, quite important is what is ICS 2.0 and what it will contain. What is quite important about ICS 2.0 is that it will have two equally important components. And I'll repeat and I'll stress the word equally important components. One is the mandatory confidential reporting by all IIG of a reference ICS, which is based on a single market adjusted valuation, a standard method for the calculation of capital requirements, and converged criteria for the determination of qualifying capital resources. In addition to that, the second equally important component is additional reporting. And here is at the option of the group-wide supervisor, not at the discretion of the firm, of the ICS based on a gap loss valuation or an internal mode capital requirement calculation. ICS version 2.0 mandatory confidential reporting. As I said, that will include, for valuation, a single market-adjusted valuation, no optionality on discounting, standard method, criteria for qualifying capital resources. It's quite important to underline and stress that the choice of MAV is due to its construction as a stable, comparable IIS developed valuation basis. Important, the equal important component, optional supplementary reporting, gap plus valuation approaches, and internal model results. And we stress there and that both gap plus and internal models are viable options that will be considered for inclusion in the ICS by the end of the monitoring period. And you have to bear in mind that each single word of this agreement has been carefully drafted and challenged by ourselves. It created lots of sweat and blood between September, actually I would say June in Windsor, up to now. So nothing happened by chance. And what is quite important to underline and stress is that it's called agreement because it was a unanimous agreement by all jurisdictions. That's quite important. This is not a majority view. And that's the reason why you saw three important ExCo members from three different geographical areas sitting at Kuala Lumpur on stage on something which was not originally planned to say, this is the agreement we all stand by. And you'll find a European representative, an American representative, and an Asian representative. And that didn't happen by chance. Aggregation method. So, the NEC, as you know, from the summer, has been announced, both the NEC was already working and the Federal Reserve were already working on an aggregation method, but now it's made clear that they're working together to develop an aggregation method. As an organization, the IIS recognizes that it's an important development for the U.S. market, and the IIS recognizes the aggregation method is still at an early stage of development. So it's quite important to recognize the fact actually it's still at the early stages. Nevertheless, the IIS has agreed to collect data from interested jurisdictions to support and help the development of the aggregation method. And what's quite important, and we made it very clear, so as I said, each word has been carefully weighted, this data collection will be separate from field testing. So when we do the data call for field testing, don't expect to find a data call for aggregation. These are separate data calls. And the aggregation method is not part of ICS version 2.0, but the IAIS, and I stress here the subject of the sentence, the IAIS aims to be in a position by the end of the monitoring period to assess whether the aggregation method provides comparable, i.e. substantially the same in the sense of the ultimate goal, outcome to the ICS. If this happens, the aggregation method will be considered an outcome equivalent approach for implementation of ICS as PCR. If it doesn't happen, no. Full stop. That's what you need to read. That's what you need to read on this sentence. But it is quite important, and I repeat, all these words are being carefully drafted. And you see things related to comparable, substantially the same, in the sense of the ultimate goal. And you don't want to know how much time we spend on each single one of them. So, now I think it's your time for question and grilling. I think we're going to find the separate issues. So. Okay, questions. Steve.
Thank you. One question that's occurred to me is once the monitoring period begins, will there be consideration of further changes in the reference method of the ICS?
I think I've already replied to you when I said that during the 5 years, the IIS will collect
right.
the data, will report to the parent committee, and if, now of course we want stable, we all hope to have stable specification which lasts, but we're not blind as well. As we demonstrated over the years, when something doesn't work, we'll have to change it. Of course, I mean, there are different types of changes. There are design changes and calibration changes. One is easier than the other. We'll all have some minor tweaks as we move along, but if necessary, we will do them. But we want to also to see over the years stable type of specifications.
Hi, I'm Jeroen Benning from the Dutch Insurance Association. A question that was raised in our membership is the 5-year monitoring period, where this we assume this will start in 2020, where European companies will basically have to report as they do on a quarterly basis under Solvency II, and then the IAGs will then also have to report in the colleges on the ICS 2.0. How can we make sure that this is not becoming too much of a burden for these companies? And how do you look at this?
Frankly speaking, I have to say we have 50 volunteers at the moment. We do this exercise, which is much more burdensome than what we expect to be at that particular point in time, because it's much more burdensome at this particular point in time because we ask for lots of optionalities and lots of options to be calculated. Last year, 6 options on discounting. This year, 3 options on discounting. If you go down to 1, you'll see that how we go there. It's in the interest, and we admit that maybe some double type of calculation that needs to be done, but this is what is happening now. But the aim is at the end of the monitoring period, when it's embedded in national law, effectively, you will have a single standard the firm will have to report, all IIG will have to report to the group-wide supervisor. That's the idea of having a global standard. So there is a price to pay, but it's infinitely lower than what firms have to do now under field testing. I think it would be much more stressful for firms to continue with 7 more years of field testing. And to be honest, we will be providing the reporting templates as well to do that.
So, Paolo, are there any big news that we should expect to hear on ICS of next year versus the ICS of this year? Are you, because in the technical specifications of 2017, there are a lot of caveats. This is like this, but we are still looking into this. It's like this for now, but we are still considering other options. So in the meantime, you've made a lot of progress. So what kind of surprises, good surprises, should we look forward to?
I have to say, this is a bit common. Each one of us should put his hands on heart and say, am I possibly partially responsible for that situation? And the answer is yes. Because, of course, I mean, each one is in human nature, the fact that actually I would like to close something when it goes in my favor. I would not like to close something when I'm not sure it's going to go in my favor. So effectively, we wanted to close lots of things last year. And the industry and supervisory community, no, you're mad, guys. Why do you want to try to close few things? Keep them open. Keep them open, guys. What are you doing? And of course, man, you can't have, this is what you end up into, you can't have the cake and eat it at the same time. That's my British side.
Okay, then I will maybe ask more directly. So in the technical specification of 2017, there was reference to potential additional work investigating a spread risk charge for debt, which we would very much not support. This is a flaw of Solvency II. I think we have mentioned it 100,000 times. But the question is this something that is actually being considered for ICS for next year? It was mentioned in the paper.
It's in the agenda for our next week meeting.
Okay. So this is bad news.
No. I mean, you don't know what... You see, that's the reaction without knowing what we're going to discuss. Because you don't know what we're going to discuss. The fact we're going to discuss it, we're not saying that we're going to kill it. We're saying we're going to discuss it.
Yeah.
There are different ways of doing that. So you need to be a bit more cautious towards us and trust us a bit hard. Because we like to surprise you when you don't expect it.
No, and that's a fair point. But just my last comment is that, I mean, on the ICS, I guess people in this room and then people back home are having discussions on we, at least in Insurance Europe, I would say at least every 2 weeks. So when you have the discussions, you have this discussion on the basis of what you know today. And then, of course, that we sort of always refer to this caveat, like there is a big risk that this flow of Solvency II is repeated in the ICS. But this remains sort of there is a probability, let's not talk about it, let's focus on what it is on the table. So basically that's why I asked, because you see sometimes the simple fact that you say yes, we are considering it, that sort of changes the whole perspective.
What I would say, and I'll try to reassure you here, that's saying that a lot of things we're discussing at the moment, and effectively the issue we have at the moment is simple. When we had a stakeholders meeting in Kuala Lumpur, and we have a stakeholders meeting today, we didn't have any of our meetings in between. So effectively, you expect us to make lots of progress. We have been discussing with ourselves over the phone. We have a meeting next week where lots of things will be discussed in advance. There will be lots of discussion with respect to several issues. I would not be necessarily scared about what you're saying, because effectively, I mean, if we observe what is in the current structure of the ICS, there is the current credit risk spread misses a small component there. Now, the way we're going to address it, we need to think about, because the structure is slightly different, is a simple way to address that. And also we have to bear in mind the consideration of that, how this may impact the other components. So we don't take blind decisions with respect to that. There will be lots of discussions with respect to that before we move forward. So we're going to have our first discussion next week. So that's the only thing I can say. And this is certainly something which was was supposed to be discussed, was supposed to be included in the credit risk since the beginning. If you go back to the 2014 consultation document and you look at the definition of credit risk there, spread risk should have been included there, or at least the part of non-default spread risk should have been included there. The structure has been slightly different. We need to find, is there an easy way to capture it? The answer goes from yes, no, will include inclusion. So everything is open in the air. So saying more than that would be entirely speculative.
We've got a question. So we've got a question from the phone. I'll read it out. It is from Tom Fennell. It was mentioned earlier that decisions on Mochi are expected by the February committee meetings. Is the same true for the open issues involving capital resources? If not, when will those decisions be made? Does the language around national discretions in the KL agreement anticipate that some of these issues may not be resolved going into the monitoring period?
I think, Tom Fennell, you've been very naughty. Yes. Now, simple answer, and I think is, if you look at the timeline of this year field testing and walk back from the experience from also the previous exercises, you realize that if we have to launch the exercise on the 16th of May, we need to take all decisions, not only the one related to Mochi, not only the one related to capital resources by February, because there's a necessary time between, a lead time between when all decision gets taken to the implementation of those decisions into technical specification, but most importantly also on the templates, and the validation of templates takes a bit of time. Because last year, if we rush it like we've done, for example, last year, when decision got taken at the last minute, you run the risk of having to issue several patches for the template, or having too many Q&A during the process, or, as it happened last year, which was not a pleasant event, was reissue completely the template when the changes are so significant. So effectively, you need to have a lead time between, you need to have one from 30 to 45 days to really implement a decision and have time to, even to a certain extent, having a pilot and distribute to volunteers the template for checks before it gets sent, because lots of mistakes are easily resolvable, links, broken links and so on. So that's why all decisions need to be taken by February, not only the one on, I think, what was the second question, sorry?
National discretion.
Our aim, Tom, is to have zero national discretion. And what is quite important, and the language was, you know, we recognize that this may not be the case, but we'll only be able to assess that at the end of the process. Having said that, what we made very clear about the type of national discretion we will be looking for are not kind of do whatever you want for that. It's more about if there were national discretion, this needs to be easily reconcilable. This is quite important. Because we would like to be able, like in a Lego approach, to unplug or unplug an element and to put all frames on a compatible basis. This is quite important when we talk about national discretion.
Is there anything in the framework at all? I haven't heard it, so I assume the answer to this may be no, but for a recognition of equivalence similar to what there is in Solvency II.
I think this goes back to the question that Marco asked before, which is effectively, is no, you are asking me a type of question about recognition of systems. So that's the same question, Marco. Yeah, but the question is, again, here we are a standard setter, not a regulator. So effectively we come out with standard, then it's up to the jurisdiction to assess what they have in their books and assess what changes need to be made to bring back their local regime to compliance with the IIS standard. They may decide not to be compliant, but that's not a decision for the IIS, that's a decision for the national authority or the regulator. Does the IIS would like to add anything?
Just to mention that we have a peer review and assessment process, so that's a second type of issue that after we issue standards and our members are committed to apply these standards, and then after that we can do some kind of assessment and peer review process. But we are not the legislature, so we are not, any decision that we are making are not do not have the force of a law.
I know that, but that doesn't prevent you from building it into the framework. If you want to put it into the standard, if you want to put criteria for how to assess equivalence into your framework, there's nothing to stop you from doing that.
Yeah, but at the same time, we're developing a standard,
yes,
a global standard. Why should we give incentives to people not to adopt that standard since the beginning? I'm sorry.
Well, I think going to your point about peer review and assessment processes, generally we develop criteria for assessment. I mean, if you look at what's in the ICPs, for instance, there's criteria for how to assess them. So, I mean, that's, you know, that will be there eventually. So, you know, that's how the assessment process will go as to, you know, whether or not the ICS has been implemented fully.
Any more questions? Steve.
Thank you. I just want to go back to Tom's question for a minute. Obviously, I think everybody in the room knows that several of the capital resources issues are critical to U.S. companies, you know, in particular discussions of senior debt and surplus notes. And I just wanted to ask if it will be too late to make presentations on those subjects at the Nashville shareholders meeting, or stakeholders meeting, excuse me. Well, I'm sorry. I'm seeing Roman shake his head no, and I think that would be a great answer. But so decisions won't have been made by that time?
We don't know, but maybe yes, maybe no. But I would say February is much more likely for all decisions. I mean, experience from last year is people will, no matter we can prepare as many packages and things like this, people would like to see the whole package and then take all decisions at the same time. And
the only thing I'd add to that, though, Steve, is we've had a lot of input on those topics. I mean, will there be anything new to add to that? So, you know, I think we've had a lot of input. We've done a lot of analysis on impact, etc.
And we also read a very helpful paper from the NAIC, which was published in October, about the intended treatment of senior debt and surplus note. Question? If not, Peter?
Oh, there's a follow-up question from Tom.
So from Tom, he said, I took Paolo's response to suggest decisions on everything as needed by February. For capital resources, my impression is that the CSFWG has done all that they can to debate and document, but it is down in the hands of FSTC to decide. Is that the way you see it, i.e. CSFWG is now done?
The answer is, I'm sorry, Tom, you left the authority and not part of CWG or FSCC. It is a confidential information we cannot disclose to you. Having said that, you may be on the right track.
Question on the phone, please.
Okay, Peter.
Hello? Hello, can you hear me?
ask your question, please?
Thank you. I wasn't sure if I was on mute.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to present today. My name is Peter Schutt, and I'm from the Geneva Association. The presentation today has been worked out in cooperation with the IIF. Unfortunately, George Brady couldn't be here today, but if you don't like it, he'll take the blame, and if you like it, I'll take the credit. We already had a chance to present in Kuala Lumpur, and at this late hour, I think it would not be very good to go through all of the arguments again. So I'll just shortly repeat the main messages. But the day after the presentation in Kuala Lumpur, we got the big, famous by now, Kuala Lumpur Agreement. And that was very valuable, but it was only also two pieces of paper. And that gives us some reason to comment. And and so I think that's why we thought it would be fair to pick up on that agreement today. And I need to say to the IIF then when we've been through this presentation, I know you'll be a bit upset and say, didn't you listen in Kuala Lumpur? Because you quite clearly asked not for questions, but for solutions. And we are happy to engage in that, but really with these two pieces of papers, more questions than solutions are coming to our mind. Slight uncertainty is still left with us after that agreement. But again, more seriously, I know we need to move away from just raising questions and see this as an invite to continue a good dialogue and together find questions. So, what were our messages? Well, first of all, we told the IIS to take the necessary time to prepare probably for the ICS, and we can ask, have you done that? Well, the timeline hasn't changed, so I don't know. We'll have to see. We also said address first the fundamentals and then sequence the ICS. That can still be done, but it's not very clear yet that this has is an important part of the project of the Kuala Lumpur Agreement. Three and four go a little together. We have always said you should reflect regional, local differences in the approach and not do a one-size-fits-all model. And by now, you have commented on the one-size-fits-all. I think I understand that one-size-fits-all is not that you have exactly the same shock all over the world to any risk. Basically, if you are targeting a 1 in 200 year approach, then that calibration needs to be different for different jurisdictions. But is that enough to say you're not doing a one size fits all? I think we more fundamentally would see more room left for the model to be applied so that it actually reflects not only differences in isolated risk factors, but also the way you run your business and the way you do your solvency calculations. But then again, we now see that there is a willingness to look at GAP plus models. You have the reference approach, the MAB. There is a willingness to look at the aggregation model being developed in the U.S., And so that is all very positive. So let's see. And finally, we've said avoid excessive noise, the volatility, what some people call artificial volatility, with the real issue being that it could trigger pro-cyclicality. Whether that will be dealt with, we will have to see. Oh, I already switched. So what does the Kuala Lumpur agreement bring in our view? Well, first of all, the fundamentals and the time frame is not changed. It's the same. It makes clear there's a willingness to take the ICS further. I think in Kuala Lumpur it was mentioned it was make or break, and it was make. And as I said, it leaves many issues open. So be sure we will have concerns and questions no matter how hard you work. We are always deliverable or able to deliver concerns and questions. What are emerging questions and concerns after the Kuala Lumpur Agreement? Well, first of all, we had until about 12 minutes ago the impression that there would be no review of the ICS in the five-year transition period. And then Paolo just said that will actually be the case. And that is good. There needs, of course, to be some kind of very stable elements in the ICS, but we found it hard to believe that you would actually gain a lot of insight and then perhaps not use that insight. So I know that there will be one or perhaps even more formal reviews, and we support that. It's also said in the agreement that there should be mandatory confidential reporting. And mandatory is a little tricky because the IAS, as you said, do not have the legal authority to do anything that is mandatory. So what does it mean? But maybe more important, how are results going to be collected and feedback from the colleges and into the ICS? Is there a legal basis for that, and how is it going to work? How are these confidential results going to be used? It's not for prescribed supervisory actions, so how are they going to be used? One thing we would urge, and then I could mention many more issues, but we really think there is a need for the IAIS to engage with rating agencies and other market analysts so that they understand what is going on and that this is not official reporting and the status that it has, because otherwise that could actually be a problem. And during that transitionary period, there should be a case for the same kind of materiality assumptions and simplifying assumptions that are now possible in the field test. Another question. You want to achieve comparable outcomes, but what does it really mean? We still do not really quite know what it means. It could have different meanings. It could have different content. And we urge that we at some point get a more clear understanding of what outcome equivalence to the ICS means, because it will be very important that by the end of the reporting period, we know the criteria that will be used to deem equivalent or not. And that is certainly one of the main open issues that we need to learn more about. Finally, on the methodology, it's very good that internal models may now be used, but you're not going to set up a whole new approval mechanism, I hope. Hopefully there will be some kind of grandfathering mechanism where the existing approved models can be used. Simplifying assumptions, I made it, can they, I mentioned it, can they still be used? And what will be, again, the process for evaluating GAP Plus and internal models during the, or by the end of the monitoring period? So, a lot of questions, a lot of unresolved issues. Where do we stand from the point of view of the IAS and the GA? Well, as I said, we would like to aim to provide answers, solutions, and so on. So far, we merely concentrated on the critical questions. But we continue to support a sound ICS. We urge you to allow for lessons to be learned. I think you have confirmed that would be done, and everything else would be a big surprise. We stand ready to continue discussions. Also, how to embed the ICS into ComFrame, although it may not be directly integrated. And then last but not least, I can promise you that you can have the delight to listen to us also at the Nashville meeting. We are looking forward to develop these issues. On my hand, I think I've almost promised now to do more solutions in January than questions, but I think George will do that presentation. And then we also look forward to perhaps have an opportunity to discuss these issues with the IAS leadership and the executive committee. And thank you for listening to me. Questions?
Thanks, Peter. I mean, as you put it down, some of the questions need further work from us. Some of the questions are much easier for us to answer. Some of the questions, the answers will be provided in the consultation document. That's why we have a consultation document. With respect to mandatory, it's pretty simple. I mean, confidential reporting of HLA and BCR, that was, to a certain extent, confidential reporting. I mean, I've never seen a GSII which refused to submit data to the IAIS. I mean, supervisors have formal powers, and informal power, which is moral suasion. I'm pretty sure that if I want one of my friends to participate in field testing, we just talk and there is a communication between us and them. They see the benefits of the process. You don't need to tell them, if you don't do that, I'll punish you. No, that's not what happens. You know, you talk to your friends, they see the value, and the question is, if these friends are part of a process like field testing, and some of these friends are not even IAIG and they're part of this process, why shouldn't we be there? I mean, when we use words like mandatory in this context, it is important because if it's a monitoring period and if it needs to be implemented at the end of 5 years, monitoring period, we want to make sure it works. It works for the friends, that we have not missed something. And these are opportunities. These are 5 year more opportunity to see, does it work? And you will have different data points there. We will tell you that. This is quite fundamental. I mean, this is not a game for anybody. This is quite important. These are important decisions which affect firms and supervisors. So people need to be reassured by that. I mean, not sure that embedding, when you say what is a legal basis or embedding international laws would help. Actually, to a certain extent, will be to the detriment of the monitoring period and to the ability to have this information more kind of an approximation basis, using proxies, using a bit of things like this. If you wanted to have it embedded in national law, straight away, why did you say monitoring period and then PCR only at the end of the monitoring period? That was the reason why we decided to do that, because we want to get people more comfortable with the idea, to be able to review, change things if necessary, and only when we are certain, and that's why we say by the end for certain of the items there, we could have said by the end it means somewhere between, because there is also, when you're getting closer to embedding something in international law, experience tells us that firms need to build their system as well, start building the system. So during all the period, we're providing the templates for that. So does that answer your question as well? Why?
Just...
Because to be mandatory, it must have a legal basis. Of course, there is a dialogue with the local, with our local supervisor, and a local supervisor has a lot of power of conviction. But it's very different from the example you gave. We are not in the principal area. You have consequences in terms of cost. It will apply only to a bunch of companies. So I cannot see how it could be mandatory. Reporting the result of an exchange with the supervisor voluntariat, as we say in French, even it's a little bit pushed by the supervisor, okay. But mandatory, I think this adjective, this I would say that it's not acceptable, mandatory, as an adjective for the concern, but it's my opinion.
Absolutely. And we respect people's opinion.
Just one comment.
But at the same time, Fabrice, it's your last meeting, and I don't want you to go out with a bit bitterness in your mouth. But
or just one comment. Just one comment. You said you cannot imagine participating IAIGs that will not be willing to report as they have done confidentially for the HLA calculation, etc. And I hope you're right. But the point I'm making is that with ICS version 2.0, we are coming closer to something which could resemble actually the real ICS. And you have made a decision and said it should not have supervisory consequences, but it could have. And it will be used by colleges. And I'm just saying that concern has been raised. I hope, as I said, that companies will want to participate and it will be possible for them. But there is a concern there.
I understand there may be a concern. I think it's always, there are sometimes fears are motivated, sometimes fears are unmotivated.
We'll see.
I understand there are also reasonable supervisors, unreasonable supervisors, and there are reasonable firms and unreasonable firms. I always work with reasonable firms. Maybe I've been lucky. and at the same time, I think that it's in everybody's interest to assess the impact of things before it gets hard implemented. I think it's in everybody's interest, and I think it's actually, I cannot understand why if I participate in field testing, then I don't want to participate in the confidential reporting. I can understand if someone has not been involved as a volunteer, then they would be much more reluctant. I understand, Fabrice, but I mean, as I said, I always work with reasonable firms. I mean, I work in Italy, in the UK, in other markets. I didn't work in France.
Okay.
We have a question from the phone. It's from Diana Keegan of MetLife, and Diana asked, when will we be advised of decisions taken for ICS version 2.0? Is it right to assume that decisions for the mandatory confidential reporting will be made after 2018 field testing, and we can still count on a choice of discounting options for 2018?
How many times did we get this question over the last 2 days? Computer says...
Wait and see.
the ambition is to have a single option this year, because we need to get closer to that thing. For version 2 is the annual general meeting, 2019, Abu Dhabi. Would be, I assume, end of October, beginning of November.
Yeah, I don't know
the exact date. Any more questions? Mac.
Okay. This is a technical question, so. So you said that you're trying to get a single discount rate, but my question is that what do you mean by single discount rate? For example, can you consider having a different discount rate based on the cost and benefit analysis for the different type of the insurance? For example, the use of OAG may make a big sense if the duration is long, so that growth matters. This is something like that. Is it short, long, and probably for the insurance companies, maybe the transferred value might be somewhat like a going concern for them in their business model. So this kind of variation can be possible as long as you set the discount rate for certain exactly identical group of insurance business.
So I was imprecise when I said single discount. I mean single approach to discounting the current estimate. Then whatever is inside that approach still has to be decided. As you could see this year, you have different options, and you have options within the options, you differentiate between different type of liabilities. And this applies to 2 out of 3 of the options. So effectively, this is something that needs to be assessed. So the answer is, once we get to the answer, and we recognize there are different ways the firms manage things, and different markets, they prefer more sophisticated approach, simpler approaches, different type of liabilities and so on. It's a very difficult task to do that. We need to jointly come to a solution, and which is appropriate. And I think because we get accused about not having pressure to come out with a solution. No, we want to come out with a solution which is appropriate for all markets.
Thank you very much. And also, I'd like to have a clarification. For example, I appreciated your clarification about your, for example, going concern kind of definition, because 3 years ago, when we met each other in California, that component was not sure. I was not sure you were working on going concern or going concern, but now you clarify that this is going concern. So please remember that going concern should be long-term for life insurance company. And also I remember that you asked me a question about my relationship with my wife after using the analogy, but I didn't answer that question because I was not sure what level of frequency I would need, because you said that, do you see your wife? And then I did not know what kind of level of frequency you needed to say yes. But now time passed by, and I have 2 years daughter, so I would say that my relationship with my wife would be going concern. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. Now, we have another question from Tom Fennell, which I think you've already kind of answered, Paolo, but we'll go here anyway. Regarding the aggregation approach, does the CSFWG anticipate a work stream to orchestrate its development? The language in the KL agreement suggests development will be by the NAIC Fed, but that the CSFWG's role is simply to collect data and in the end to assess comparability. Just want to clarify the CSFWG's role in development, if any.
I have to say, I mean, the AIS agreed to collect data. The development is done by interested jurisdictions. And the AIS, and it is, this data collection is separated from field testing. This is not part of ICS version 2.0, which means it's not part of the CSFWG workload. And this was made clear because we are already bursting with work. And the AIS aims to be in a position by the end of the monitoring period to assess whether the aggregation method, blah, blah, blah. I mean, just rereading what we have in our slides. I don't know if the Secretary wants to add something. So, Tom, do we have any other questions? Or can you wait until Nashville?
I just want to ask Peter whether he thinks England are going to score 177 runs tomorrow to beat Australia in the Ashes, because that may be my ambition, but it may or may not be achieved. And then extending the cricket analogy, for those of you, because it's a limited interest sport, I don't know, but Peter would appreciate this. I just slightly struggle. I can quite completely understand the ambition for you to try and narrow the options, but I still struggle that on data, why would you not collect data if we're willing to give that on a range of other things that could inform a decision? Because you don't have to decide on some of these things in 2018. I know you want to shape this. I know you want to really shape version two. We all also have that united interest in shaping a version two. But if we're willing to do something, you know, and we can provide some basis to do that, I'll just encourage you to do so, because I just think that my concern about the narrowing the options, I can understand the ambition to do that, but I'm just wondering whether there's, we'll miss a trick on a year's cycle of extra information that could help inform a more considered position at the end.
Yeah, thanks for your comment. We'll take that into consideration when... And in answer to your first question, possible but not probable.
any more
questions? You seem to love us. You don't want to leave this room. So if not, thank you very much for your participation. And for all of you who come to Nashville, we need more speakers for Nashville if you're interested. Bear in mind that there will be part one and part two of the stakeholders meeting. So part one is going to be on the ICS and part two is going to be on ABA. And so you'll have also an opportunity to comment on the consultation paper on ABA. We'll provide first comments on that. And for those who love to work over the weekend, it's on Saturday.
Okay.
And thank you to all those on the call.
Thank you for your feedback, guys. I'm sorry.